following is from Friday, March 6th, 2015.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Temple Emmanuel is a house of prayer for all people, and all who would worship with us here in peace are most welcome in this house of God. Wherever you are from, whenever you are in our neighborhood, we hope you'll consider this house to be your home too. To that end, I'd want you to know of some wonderful opportunities coming up. First, of course, our worship continues tomorrow morning with Torah study at 9:15 and services here at 10:30. On Monday night at 6, you're invited to attend with the Women's Auxiliary a showing of the documentary Rescue in the Philippines at the Consulate General of the Republic of the Philippines on 5th Avenue between 45th and 46th Streets. Or Monday at 7:30, join us here as Jeffrey Goldberg, national correspondent for The Atlantic, columnist for Bloomberg View, and one of America's leading commentators on foreign policy, national security in the Middle East, discusses the most pressing issues regarding America's role in the Middle East, Israel's status as a Jewish democracy, and the state of anti-Semitism today. And given all that has transpired in recent weeks in Europe and on college campuses, you probably read about events at UCLA, his talk could not be more timely. Tuesday at 11, Club 65 welcomes back the wonderful Dr. Mark Weistuck, who will examine the historicity of the Exodus. And on Wednesday at 6, Emmanuel Cares hosts an evening especially for older adults without younger family on how to access New York City's vast resources in making critical life decisions and how to document critical personal information. And finally, if you've not yet voted in the World Zionist Congress elections, please do, either on a computer in our lobby or with the paper ballots there, or by going to Temple Emmanuel's website. A vote for the Artsa slate will further the cause of Reform Judaism in Israel and the values of pluralism and social equality for which our movement stands. Now, about a year ago, our Board of Trustees charged a team of lay leaders and professionals representing the many constituencies of this extraordinary congregation with the task of charting Emmanuel's course for the future. Throughout its 170-year history, Congregation Emmanuel of the City of New York has stood proudly as a center of leadership and innovation, offered itself humbly to the city's downtrodden and elderly, and sounded with the shofar's clarity its message of outreach to other faith communities. We are the stewards of that legacy. Our responsibility, our calling, is to carry that flame forward so that it shines even more brilliantly for the generations to come. The world has changed many times since this temple's founding, and American religious life continues to evolve. Our vision team's task has been to study that ever-shifting landscape and to suggest the position this historic congregation ought to occupy on it, in our city, our movement, and the Jewish world. Many of you joined us in December for a first conversation about Emmanuel's next chapter, sharing aspirations which have become integral to the vision team's thinking. Tonight, first here and then upstairs in a discussion over dinner, many of us will have another opportunity to be part of that sacred work. Our guide, not just this evening, but throughout the journey, has been my beloved friend and teacher, Rabbi Dr. Lawrence Hoffman. Ordained right here as a rabbi in 1969, Dr. Hoffman received his PhD in 1973. And has taught since then at the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in New York. From 1984 to 1987, he directed HUC's School of Sacred Music. In 2003, he was named the first Barbara and Stephen Friedman Professor of Liturgy, Worship, and Ritual. Today, he teaches classes in liturgy, ritual, and spirituality, as well as theology and synagogue leadership. In 1994, he co-founded Synagogue 2000, which became Synagogue 3000, a trans-denominational project to envision the ideal synagogue as a moral and spiritual center for the 21st century. And Since its inception in 2008, he has also directed the Tisch Fellows Program, created by our own wonderful members, Bonnie and Danny Tisch, a co-curricular offering that engages HUC students in issues of synagogue leadership and contemporary challenges for religion in America. So for more than four decades, Dr. Hoffman's work has combined research, teaching, and extraordinary passion for the spiritual renewal of North American Judaism. He has written or edited more than 40 books, including My People's Prayer Book, a 10-volume edition of the Siddur with modern commentaries, which was named a National Jewish Book Award winner for 2007. His Rethinking Synagogues, A New Vocabulary for Congregational Life, and his Art of Public Prayer are widely used by churches and synagogues as guides to organizational visioning and liturgical renewal. In 2011, he received a second National Jewish Book Award for co-authoring Sacred Strategies, Transforming Synagogues from Functional to Visionary. The most recent volume in his Prayers of Awe series, All the World, Universalism, Particularism, and the High Holy Days, was published last fall, and the next is due this summer. And Larry's articles, both popular and scholarly, have appeared in 8 languages on 4 continents, including his regular column in the Jewish Week. Having him with us tonight is, for me, a professional privilege and a personal joy. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Dr. Lawrence Hoffman.
Shabbat Shalom. My thanks, first of all, to Rabbi Davidson. What a joy it is to be with you in this great pulpit, in this great sanctuary, and in this great synagogue, and to be associated with you in the great work that's being done, and that I want to introduce to the congregation tonight. And to Rabbi Ehrlich, who's very much the soul of this congregation, having been here all these years, you, who were my student once upon a time, and now to be with you and to think to myself how much you mean to this congregation, I feel I am honored to be here with you too. And so to all of you, my task tonight is just give you a sense of what I will in fact call a revolution. I know it is not commonplace to walk into Temple Emmanuel and be invited to a revolution, but a genuine revolution is in fact taking place. I don't mean the noisy kind. We had one of those, and it became the United States of America, and that's enough for me. I'm not talking about anything with a guillotine, nothing quite like that. I mean a revolution in thought, a revolution in Jewish life. And in fact, it's not just Jewish life. There's a revolution in religion that's taking place in America. And not just a revolution in religion, but a revolution in pretty much everything else. We all know that communications have changed. We certainly know that children are growing up differently. You can't pick up the newspaper, get a tweet, without recognizing immediately how things are changing. But the fact is, things change around us all the time, slowly but surely, and we rarely have a chance to sit back and plan them. We are reactive, not proactive, and the secret of great Jewish life is obviously to be proactive. To realize that we have in our midst the possibility of becoming anything we want to be. Yes, there is anti-Semitism abroad, and yes, it raises its ugly head here in America on occasion, but it is also true that never before has there been a group of Jews, ourselves namely, who have been as learned, who have been as free, who have had the opportunity that we do, with the resources unparalleled through time. And so here we are, a Jewish community that can be proactive and plan. So I invite you to a revolution taking place abroad, beyond these doors, that is to say, but certainly taking place here, the details of which slowly you will learn. And my task tonight is just to give you a little bit of background about how revolutions occur and why they occur, and a way to think about them so that you can go home and not be afraid that this revolution will be, as I say, the noisy kind, and everything will have changed, because it won't have. great revolutions of thought occur because we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. Think in science. Think in science of the Einsteinian revolution that sees the world entirely differently. Why? What about Newton? Does that mean Sir Isaac Newton meant nothing? We cast aside? Far from it. Great revolutions in thought stand on the shoulders of those that came before and simply expand the purview so that scientifically what Newton had to say works just as well as it did before Einstein. Einstein expands it for a world that's expanded so that we now recognize we must deal with the very great and the very tiny, for which Newtonian physics doesn't work quite as well. So too, Jewish thought is expanding. Our understanding of synagogues has grown larger, not to cast aside all that's gone before, but to build on the shoulders, the very strong shoulders of those who once had their revolution, and had they not gone through with it, we would not be sitting here today. Judaism would have died. The greatness of Judaism is precisely the insistence on thinking in revolutionary terms when times change. We are alive today as a people, not because we played it safe. Think then for a moment about revolutions. They come because each generation has its own project. Another way to think of the revolution then is to think of yourself as part of a new generation. Generation has nothing to do with cohort. A cohort is when you were born. If you were born in the Depression era, well, that's your cohort. You can't avoid it. If you were born in the Vietnam years, you are the Vietnam cohort. If you were born in the 1990s, then you're the 1990s child. That's it. Cohorts don't change, but generations do. A generation, then, is people of whatever cohort and age who decide to respond to a specific historical event. What makes life worthwhile is not just the chance birth that brought you here. What makes life worthwhile is the set of historical events going on round about you that you decide to make your own. To go through life, then, is to respond to different historical events that present themselves. Each new generation chooses a different set of historical circumstances to respond to. And when you do that, you are the new generation. Actually, Jews in America have gone through four generations, if you like. Four times there's been a different set of events that have occurred that have made Jews different. Each time, Jews have responded positively, and when they have done so, they have selected what I call a project. The project being not just something you do on a Sunday afternoon. The project being what your life is ultimately all about, beyond, of course, the most important things, your family, the people who love you, you love them, your responsibilities to work. I understand that. But beyond that, what will people say of what it was that you responded to in a grand scale? That's our project. And so this set of new events that establish who we are at each different moment in our lives creates the possibility of a project. The first generation of the people who came, who were our founders for this great congregation, German founders, founders of Central Europe in the 19th century, who were responding to the possibility that they no longer had to be in ghettos. In the ghettoed life of Europe, they were convinced that they were a people alone, that they would never be able to work with non-Jews, for example, that they would never have rights, that they could never do anything beyond making their ghetto a better place and going to synagogue and praying that Sunday God would end the whole thing and bring the Messiah, and that would be that. That first great revolution, yes, that first great revolution the revolution that gave us Reform Judaism responded to what Napoleon had done when he released Jews from their ghettos. And there they were, with the winds of the Enlightenment that had affected all of Europe, now finally part of the Jewish world as well. How would Jews respond? And what made Reform Judaism a revolutionary new movement was the realization that we did not have to be a people alone. That we could, in fact, walk arm in arm with non-Jews as well, affecting history, making history change. That, in fact, there could be a better time. Yes, there could be progress. Yes, we could imagine a new and better world. And so rabbis built new synagogues with lay people by their sides, and they preached, as you heard tonight, about changing the world. We take that for granted now, don't we? But once upon a time, that was a new doctrine. The possibility of Jews being like everybody else, but affecting the world from a Jewish perspective. And note, that revolution did not throw aside everything that came before. Those rabbis knew the Talmud, the Bible, Jewish literature as well as anyone. They built upon it. They selected from it. And out of it came a new response to history. And we are here because of that. And the people who built this congregation, Temple Emmanuel, proudly said, here we stand. With a new world of possibility brought about by the Enlightenment of the 19th century and wedding the Enlightenment and ideas of progress with the Jewish tradition that was promising equally as well and that spoke with the accent of 2,000 years of history. But of course, times changed. The next generation had a different project, and that was the generation of Jews who came from Eastern Europe. They had never been freed from the ghetto by Napoleon. They knew nothing about the Western world and the Enlightenment. They had never experienced the culture of Western Europe. Jews in Western Europe came out of Western Europe with the recognition that they could be citizens of a nation state, that is to say, in here, Americans by citizenship. They could be Jews by religion. They thought, and this part didn't turn out to work so well, they thought also they would be German by culture. I mean, they came in the 19th century. They were used to Bach and Beethoven and Mozart, and here they had cowboys and Indians. They were convinced there could be no culture in America. As I say, that part turned out to be wrong. But the rest of it worked. They decided they could be Americans and Jews, as I say, and that worked perfectly well, and they passed that on. The Jews from Eastern Europe had never known German culture. That part was never part of their aspiration. If you suddenly found yourself free in some way or another in Tsarist Russia, it wasn't the same freedom that you enjoyed in Western Europe. The Tsar actually was trying to get rid of you. And so Jews left Eastern Europe without any sense that they would be part of the ongoing nation quite the same way. When they got here, they discovered something very interesting. They discovered that the very idea of a religion, Judaism as a religion, had been part of the revolution in Western Europe. See, Napoleon had called together these group of Jews in Western Europe and said to them, "You want to stay here? I need to know what you are. Are you a nation state? Then you better leave. Now, if you're a religion, on the other hand, you can stay." And it didn't take the Jews of Western Europe long to figure out they were a religion. But it was a revolutionary idea. There was no word in Hebrew yet for religion. And so Jews in Western Europe invented the notion that we would be a religion. German, in their case, by citizenship, Jewish by religion. American for us when we came here by citizenship, Jewish by religion. And when the Eastern European Jews came here, why, that was a new idea altogether. Most of them had given up religion on the boat on the way over. And religion for them had not been reformed because that never happened in Eastern Europe. They were uncomfortable in reformed temples, which were so Western European. And so they eventually built their own synagogues, and that's how the conservative movement came into being, which, of course, is another story. But their project was to have a different kind of religion. Most of all, though, their project was to make up for what had been lacking in the German immigrants' experience. Peoplehood, the state of Israel, the idea of Jewish tradition writ large in history, and all of that became part of the Eastern European project. Realize one's peoplehood, support Israel, and add that to the mix that already existed, and that's how you get the next stage of Temple Emmanuel. And then in the next generation, which I don't have time for now, we'll perhaps discuss it later for those who I meet later, is the generation of the 50s after World War II. And there, too, there was another project because there was another challenge. Namely, the post-war years. The realization that we could build something altogether fresh, and the baby boomers. Some of you are baby boomers. You were the challenge back then. And Judaism responded. But the point is, we live in a new era, don't we? We live in an era now where things are very, very different. I think of it as a world of complete individuality. You may like it or not, but there it is. In the old world, people chose to be Judaism and chose Judaism and to be Jews automatically. It was just what Jews did, no longer. In the old world, there was a sense of Jewish obligation, in other words, that's just what Jews did, no longer. The number of choices weren't the same. New words have cropped up. Spirituality. Everywhere one talks of spirituality, one hears about it, but that's a word that was never even used back in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s. Meaning, what's the meaning of life? The very idea that there's life after your children or life after a career, life after 40, life after 50, why, that's altogether new as well. How do you build a new Judaism and a new temple, a new experience of Judaism for free choice that's spiritual, that draws people by choice and draws the next generation in, a generation that doesn't automatically join anything? Now read the papers, and they'll tell you those are all the challenges that will prevent religion from establishing itself. You will see people say that religion is dead. You will find more and more people saying, oh, temples, churches are things of the past. Look what happened to Europe, after all. There are still churches there, but you go there to visit as, what, as tourists. Nobody prays in them. And as for synagogues, of course, Hitler destroyed them. But here's what those founders, those German founders who gave us Emmanuel, discovered back then, and it's true now as much as it was then. America is an anomaly. America is the only country in the world, the only industrial or post-industrial country that is genuinely religious. Ask the average American, do you believe in God? 90% of the people will say yes. Ask Europeans, 30%, if that. Americans have this sense of the divine, even if they don't believe in God, they believe in the divine. There's something about Americans that still looks forward to all the great possibilities and finds meaning in life to the religious tradition of our ancestors. And so welcome then to the revolution that stands on the shoulders of the past, that responds to the new experience of today, and does so in this magnificent country of freedom and of hope, of aspiration and, yes, of spirituality and of religion. Of course, we can build a great new chapter. I invite you to make note of that night and the time that you were here. As you walk out the door, take a look around a little different. And remember tonight, because I can tell you with every degree of certainty that I can muster in my body, that we are engaged in this great temple on formulating the next great chapter. And you and your children and your grandchildren and people who have never stepped foot in these doors will find meaning in life here that they cannot even imagine at the moment. Oh, yes, when I say join the revolution, I do mean join it. You know how many people have lived through revolutions and they never took part in it, and years later someone said, were you part of the revolution? And they say, no, I missed it. This is something you don't want to miss. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Join in finding out how things will be different. And you will be amazed at the way your life can take on new shape, far more beautiful than you can imagine. Shabbat Shalom.